to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our community and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. Abe Lincoln recently moved from board chair to executive director for hospice, SLO. He joins host Chris Kington Barker to talk about how the first hospice in San Luis Obispo created a non-medical volunteer hospice has continued to serve the community since 1977. Hospice SLO is now one of only 14 non-medical volunteer hospices still providing services to the U.S. Today, we'll learn how much they offer free of charge to the community, who benefits, and how you can get involved in the grassroots organization. You are invited to listen, learn, and participate in the conversation between now and 2 o'clock. We are live in the studio today, so please call in and be a part of the discussion at 805-781-3875. Now let's join our host, Chris, and her guests. Over to you, Chris.
Thank you, Donna. When Hospice of San Luis Obispo County was established in 1977 as the first hospice here in SLO County, it was created as a grassroots non-medical volunteer hospice to support county home health medical services for patients who preferred to die at home. It was also the first organization to offer grief counseling services at no cost to families through professional and trained volunteers. Hospice SLO has continued under the designation of volunteer hospice, while the modern healthcare landscape has made it incredibly difficult for purely grassroots donation-funded models to survive, providing unconditional emotional support free of all the restrictions, time limits, and financial demands of the corporate medical system. Hospice SLO continues as one of only 14 non-medical volunteer hospices still providing those services free of charge here in the U.S. My guest, Abe Lincoln, is the executive director of Hospice SLO, and I want to thank you for being here today, Abe.
Well, absolutely. Thank you.
We're going to be talking about how this nonprofit has been a safety net for thousands over the past 49 years who've been benefited from the services offered free of charge by an agency with a majority of staffing who continue to be providing care and services, and they're trained volunteers.
Absolutely.
That's really an amazing kind of an achievement, 49 years and that much of the community to be volunteering to make this happen.
It speaks a lot to the need, for sure.
Yeah.
And it speaks to our community. This is, as you mentioned, it's one of 14 non-medical volunteer hospices left in the country. But what we do is very important, and we fill a gap. And, you know, 49 years, we're coming. We're going to have a big party next year for our 50th anniversary that everyone's invited to. But that says a lot, especially in our area with as many nonprofits as we have. The longevity talks to, I think, not only the need for the services, but the willingness for the community to continually support us. And from my perspective, it's just an honor to be, you know, momentarily in this role to help make sure the organization is around for another 50 years, long after I'm gone, because I think that it really is reflective of who we are.
You know, you in the intro, we talked about you starting as a board member, mm-hmm. and you were president of the board for a while, and that probably was, you were board member for about 6 years. What is the difference now that you're sitting in an executive director position in a nonprofit? Is there a different sense that you have of the same organization looking at it from a different perspective?
For sure. And I do want to take the second to mention that it was lunch with you that first invited me to the board all that time ago. I think we had lunch at Petra one day, and mm-hmm. you came and said, would you be interested in joining the board? And so So thank you for that introduction to this, to me in this arena. Yes, I've been an executive director in other places before. But I did join the board in 2020, 2019, right pre-COVID, right? So
right, 2019.
The world was a different place, and managing through COVID from a board perspective was very challenging, as it was for everyone.
All the nonprofits, yeah.
For sure. And then I did become the board chair for the last 2.5 years. And then we had a transition, and I stepped in as the interim executive director. I had some experience. I had significant experience with the organization itself, and it definitely, you know, deeply impacted me, and I could see its importance. So stepping into an executive director role, which, like I said, I've done before, but it's a very different, it's a significantly different view from the oversight of a board to the day-to-day of all the things that go on managing a nonprofit. And it's a very interesting and challenging dynamic. Nonprofits, you know, I was a Cal Poly business major way back when, and most of my career before I got here was in the corporate world. But nonprofits come with a lot of different elements that sometimes I don't think people realize how different this dynamic is. It's one of probably the most challenging areas that I've, and most exciting, because the good that you do, you can feel. You know, mm-hmm. you know that the work we do makes an impact, and you can go to bed at night going, you know, I did all I could today, and I know that we helped somebody, and that feels pretty good.
And this is a really different kind of a hospice. You know, this hospice being called a non-medical volunteer hospice is the original model, which was before the government started to reimburse for hospice care.
Right.
And this board, or the original board of the hospice here in San Luis Obispo, Hospice SLO, decided to stay with that model because they wanted to continue to provide services to people regardless of when they were diagnosed and what kind of needs they had for emotional, spiritual, and practical support. So what they didn't want to have some agency or organization tell them was you need to wait until a person is 6 months away from the end of their life, that you can't engage and provide services at the time of diagnosis. They wanted to be able to do things differently. And the downside of that is your agency doesn't get paid for anything.
It's true. I wouldn't have it any other way. You know, there are medical hospices, and we're complementary to medical hospice. But
say how you're complementary.
Because we don't do what a medical hospice does, so there's no direct competition.
So you're not competing.
We're really not. You know, we don't have skilled nursing. We don't deal with medications. That's not what we do. I kind of see us as, you know, the big, you know, the arms around, the big hug around all the things that happen before, during, after, that don't fall into the needs approval, will pay for, won't pay for, because there's much more. I mean, I've been on the nonprofit side for in the medical arena, and I've been on the profit side for a long time. I work for United Health as well. And our health system doesn't certainly cover a lot of things. But this process, which we will all go through at one point, needs more than what is currently prescribed, right? The 6 months of the diagnosis. You know, we can be there for grief support, grief counseling, care management. We can provide so much more, community education before, support groups, all this stuff, because it doesn't happen in a time frame that is uniform for everybody, and then all of a sudden it's done, right? You don't check a box that says, oh, 6 months, and then once those days tick off, everything's fine and we can go back. It's a much squirrelier process.
Much longer.
It's much longer. It starts earlier. It lasts longer. It has such a big impact on not only the people who are going through it, but their friends and their family. And it is a life-changing, you know, event for the whole circle there. And it, if not handled well, I mean, we see it all the time. I mean, grief is can be damaging, right? If you don't understand or how to learn to work through that, it has serious impacts. And so we have a lot of freedom to engage people at all different levels, really any. You know, we see kids, we see really anybody in the community. I got this quote earlier that grief doesn't discriminate, and so neither do we. And so that part is very impactful. Yes, we do not get paid through Medicaid or Medicare or anything. But I am confident that the service we provide to this community is significant and important enough that this community and has supported us, you know, through donations, through grants. We do events, you know, bequests. You know, bequests are a big thing, right?
Yeah.
So it is, like I said, it's a different model, right? You do something, you get paid for the thing you do. We do something for people who need it, and then we find donors and people who believe in our cause who contribute and, along with our volunteers. And so it's maybe not as straightforward as, you know, what we traditionally think.
It's not a straight line.
It's not, no. But it's so much more fulfilling and so much more meaningful and impactful to the individuals, to the families, to this community that I love being a part of it, right? It's a challenge for sure.
Yeah,
there's no easy, you know, manual that says these are the things you have to do as an executive director to manage a nonprofit, because it changes all the time. And clearly things have changed for all nonprofits within the last year or two around funding, and that affects us all. So,
and the, you know, and to what you're talking about, the community has obviously appreciated the services and the fact that you've been here 49 years as an organization.
Right.
Would definitely speak to that. The original board who founded Hospice SLO did that because they were also looking for grief services.
Right.
One of the mothers who was grieving, who served on the board, could not find a place for grief services in the community. And that was a big piece of what this program was about. She didn't want other people to have to go and look for services and then turn up empty. So the grief services, unlike for a medically certified hospice, which are limited to the families of people that they provide services to, are for anybody in the community, like you were talking about, however and whenever the death occurred. And I think you also are providing services for grief support for people who've lost their pets.
Yeah, absolutely.
In collaboration with Humane.
Yes. Yeah. 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 No, we are.
And with Woods, right?
With Woods Humane Society. So, like I said, grief impacts us all over the place. Thank you for bringing up our Woods collaboration. And I was there just earlier this month. And that's a perfect example, right? There's a lot of grief around pet loss. Pets are very important pieces. And when you lose a pet, the grief comes, you know, it doesn't, like I said earlier, it doesn't discriminate.
Yeah.
And so we want to be a part of that as well. And so the collaboration there, to me, makes a lot of sense. It's an interesting one there. The pet loss sometimes comes, you know, I see grief. And if I see the grief in a combination with shame, right? If I shouldn't feel bad, you know, get another dog, or if I have something that tells me that to get over this, right? That combination, and I'm not trying to exaggerate, but that combination of trying to deal with your grief alone is lethal. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has serious impact. And so if we can't be open and be there for any kind of grief that happens, then I think we're missing out. You know, we had one of our grief counselors, you know, there was an accident, a car accident just up this weekend, I believe, up in the Cambria area. And one of our grief counselors was up with the school yesterday. So
you do community response.
That's right.
Yeah,
and that's crisis. Right. So when the community calls for mm-hmm. us, we want to be the source for whatever it is, right? So, you know, we talk about ambiguous grief or anticipatory grief, grief for pet loss, grief, mm-hmm. you know, like I said, mm-hmm. it comes in a lot of different ways. And we try to provide services, counseling, education, support groups, whatever we can to respond to that community, to our community.
I'm Chris Kington Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. You can now expand your listening with KCBX 2. Stream it on the new KCBX app, available on our website at kcbx.org. My guest today is Abe Lincoln, Executive Director for Hospice of San Luis Obispo County. Our topic is Hospice Slow, one of 14 grassroots non-medical hospice organizations still providing services in the U.S. today. If you've received services through Hospice, we'd love to hear from you at 805-781-3875. Abe, you mentioned when you were talking about some of the services, care management. And care management is an area that has just kind of been a desert here in the county. And just as kind of a way of explaining that, when people are on service, say with home health, or they're in a hospital, or they're on service with an agency, there may be somebody there that is managing their care and putting them together with agencies that can benefit them. But as soon as they're discharged from those services, they are on their own.
Yeah.
So if you get discharged from the hospital, you kind of have names and numbers, and you know all those connections that were made for the hospital, you're now following up on those on your own. They're not going to do that for you. If you get let off of home health services, you now are looking for other things. The social worker is no longer following you. So, you know, for people that are in between agencies, mm-hmm. they fall through the cracks. And there are so many people that don't know how to navigate the systems. And you were remarking before we came on the air that this county is really rich in the kinds of different community nonprofits that are available, but people often don't know how to get to them.
Yeah. You know, our healthcare system as a whole is very disjointed. It's very difficult to manage. I've been in this world one way or the other for, you know, 15 to 20 years, and I don't know that I could confidently get around myself.
Yeah.
And we have this interesting combination here in our county where we do have a lot of nonprofits. I do believe that if you need something, there's someone here who has a nonprofit who can help you one way or the other. Finding that can be difficult. And then we have a combination of we have a shortage of from the healthcare professionals, from doctors and therapists, because of another set of information or another set of circumstances. So we have a place where we've got a lot of people who help, and then we don't necessarily have as much of the professional help as we need. And so it makes it very complicated. And if you're dealing with your own grief, your own illness, any of those things, it can become defeating, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it can become, I only have so much energy, and I can't figure this out. And that's where it really makes things much, much worse. So care management is, you know, very important in all aspects of healthcare. I think it's really something that is super meaningful for us as well. We deal with a topic, you know, death is a topic that is hard for, I mean, it is very hard for folks to even see straight when they're in the middle mm-hmm. of that. So having an organization who is comfortable, who knows the area, who can help guide you, and specifically for to this point around care management is really invaluable. Just the guidance of here's what's available, here's where you need to go, here's how we can help you. It makes a big difference for sure. So yeah. I see that every day.
Yeah, and it could be that somebody's diagnosed with an illness that is going to be progressive and they're already starting to see decline. Maybe it's the breadwinner. Maybe mm-hmm. it's the primary breadwinner of the family, and they can see that the income's going to go down. So how do you resource that? How do you get veterans benefits? How do you connect with the veterans agency?
Yeah.
How do you look at supplemental food? How do you now work on getting a reduction in your utility bills?
Right.
So that you can reduce some of your payments. How can you get assistance from organizations that support that particular disease that you've been diagnosed with that may have special kinds of grants or special kind of benefits that you wouldn't normally know that may not be known by a physician's office who's diagnosed that?
Right. And, you know, I mean, some of the things you just listed, not only how do you find them, a lot of people don't know they exist.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You know, there are lots of programs out to help with your medication, with your
yeah.
your utilities,
yeah.
with all those things. We've got a wonderful food bank. Mm. But if you don't even know that that's a thing,
yeah.
It makes it a lot harder. And when you're struggling in your world with whatever that happens to be, it's hard to look beyond and ask questions, and so
of course.
Having that advocate, having that person to at least share the information with you, you know, we've seen it over and over, and it really makes a big difference.
Yeah, for years, Hospice Low had Kim Chartrand, mm-hmm. who was a wonderful nurse who did that care management
right.
and would do care planning and would call back and see, you know, have you been able to do those steps?
Right.
What haven't you been able to do? How can I help with that? And now you've got Jessica Devereaux,
right.
who came from Wilshire.
Yep.
And she was really pivotal in the senior services mm-hmm. program, who's now doing care management. So you have a person who's able to do that, who knows all those resources in the community and can access those and do care planning. And that's free of charge.
Right, right. You know, all of our services are free of charge. You know, that is something that is very important to us because I don't believe it should be, you know, the cause that prevents you from getting the care that you need.
Mm-hmm.
So all of our services are free of charge. Again, you can contact us long before you contact a medical hospice. We can be there before and after. Now, the work we do, I still have to raise money for. So it is free of charge, but it still costs us. And so
there's still a cost.
There is still a cost, but that is the magic trick of nonprofits, right.
right?
How do we provide services to anyone who needs it? And then how do we figure out how to fund it? And that's the balance. But we have a tremendous team, right? I am just so impressed by everyone in this organization. And to your point, a couple came from Wilshire. So,
mm-hmm.
But we have a lot of experience. I believe this with all my heart that we are, you know, one of the experts at dealing with grief and bereavement and death and that whole picture. And I think that is kind of what makes us special.
You've got a total, including you, of 9 staff.
That's true.
Yeah, 9 staff.
Yeah.
So, you know, and those 9 staff are working managers. They're not people that just supervise. That's right.
Boots on the ground people.
And
that is the dynamic of a nonprofit. It's right? a small but mighty team.
They train.
Right. And where our superpowers come from is our volunteers,
yeah.
right? So we have a big volunteer group. But this organization has committed to really training volunteers, really putting time into volunteers. And even though some of our volunteers go through all of our training, our 6-week program, and not all of them come back, but they take away the knowledge. They take away yeah. a lot of information. And so that has been a huge part. And I truly believe that volunteer training and the work we do with our volunteers is what really has ingrained us into this community, right? Because a lot of people have come and gone through our volunteer program. And while we do have a small but mighty staff, we have a large committed volunteer base. And that's really what Hospice Slo is about, right? It's about this entire organization and its impact. And so there are times I feel like we act like a big company or a big organization mm-hmm. because we have reach, right? And at the end of the day, what we are doing with that is a tiny fraction of the cost that if this was at a professional, you know, a for-profit organization. It's such a small cost to this community for the amount of healing and impact that we can provide. So
Hospice Slo's training is probably one of the best hospice trainings because it's a training not only about hospice itself, but it's an opportunity for people to look at their own relationship mm-hmm. and their own attitudes about living, dying, and end of life. So I think that to your point of people taking the training and integrating that into their life, maybe they don't volunteer, but they'll use that at some point in some way. It will come back. And
I fully believe that. And there's a quote that, and I can't recall who said it, but it was something to the effect, once you learn how to die, you really learn how to live. And so our impact goes much further.
Yes, I hear. And we have a question from Thomas on the line. So, Thomas, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi.
Some years ago, did you have a woman by the name of Rabbi Jane that worked with hospice?
Yes.
Rabbi Janice? Yes.
Yes.
She was on our
yes.
board for a while.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yeah, she married my wife and I.
Oh, okay. She's such a joy.
Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, a friend of ours, her son was very successful in business, but he was into bodybuilding, and he took a lot of steroids. And because of that, he died of cancer at the age of 44.
Oh, how
I'm sorry to hear that.
Right through his whole body. And at the end, there was really nothing anybody can do. And the hospice was very, very helpful. They worked very good with the palliative care, and they helped with the family. But it's very tragic. You know, sometimes people abuse their bodies, and things like this happen. But the hospice does very, very good work, and it's one of the best facilities in the Central Coast, if not the only facility.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for sharing that, Thomas. I appreciate you calling in.
Yes. Well, thank you for your work. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And we're going to take just a quick break right now, and we'll be back with Abe Lincoln in just a moment or two.
The Road Home is a weekly radio show that traces the path of Americana music from its roots to its branches with new releases, hidden gems, and old favorites from the U.S. and around the world. I'm Marisa Waddell. Join me on Thursday nights as we travel the winding trails of folk, blues, soul, and more following the music from its origins across the globe and finding our way back home. Take the road home every Thursday night from 6:30 to 8, right after All Things Considered, or anytime on demand at kcbx.org.
When Congress voted to eliminate federal funding for public media a year ago, it created an ongoing budget gap for dozens of stations in California. It also created a powerful movement where the community started stepping up to protect the service. On this California Public Radio Day, we're asking you to keep that movement going so independent news and programming stay strong. Support the stations you care about now. Here's how.
You can give at kcbx.org or call during business hours at 800-549-8855. And just so you know, your donation today goes towards our Fall Pledge Drive Challenge Fund. Central Coast Voices continues with our host, Chris Kington Barker.
Thank you, Donna. My guest today is Abe Lincoln, Executive Director for Hospice SLO County, and our topic is one of only 14 grassroots non-medical hospice organizations still providing services in the U.S. today. That's Hospice of San Luis Obispo County. Grief services are offered to the community for any death, regardless of when or how it occurred, including anticipatory grief support and groups for pet loss. Have you or a loved one benefited from Hospice SLO services? I'd love to have you join us at 805-781-3875. We heard from Thomas, but we'd also love to hear from you and share about what you heard, you found helpful. Welcome back, Abe.
Thank you.
You know, we've talked a little bit about care management. I want to talk about another part of your life that kind of blends in with what you're doing right now. You also have another career that you started, and this actually works into your hospice work, but you started doing some acting.
Yeah, I did. So I started acting a little over 3.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. My youngest daughter decided she wanted to do it. I have 4 kids, and I try to be a very involved parent. And so when she started, I said, I'll do it with you. And so we started taking some classes together. But I found that I really loved it. I do both the screen, so TV and film acting, and theater as well. And you know what they say, when you love something, it involves all of your life. And so it did make a lot of sense to me in my head, as the executive director of Hospice, to combine the two. So recently we had a film at the Palm Theater. It was a part of the When You Die. It was a 52-minute documentary on consciousness after death. And I didn't know who would show up, but we had that. It was a Wednesday at 5:30. We had 89 of the 89 seats filled.
That's great.
15 minutes before the show even started, and unfortunately had to turn away some folks. So it definitely told me this community is ready, willing, and interested in talking about this.
Yeah,
which I think is fantastic, and it's one of the ways that art can help. It starts the discussion. It can venture into topics, you know, and that's movie or theater or plays that can create discussions and have that first conversation, mm-hmm. and kind of normalize some of this, right? And this talking about death and grief and bereavement, it can be a scary thing to do, and there are certainly a number of people who want nothing to do with this topic, right?
Right.
But for me, that started to make a lot of sense. There was this point where they really, you know, there's a little bit of the chocolate and peanut butter started to come together. So we did that film where we are going to do an event with SLO Rep. There's a play that is opening called The Father, a tragic farce. Won lots of awards, became a film. Anthony Hopkins was in the film. They have a preview night, the night their final rehearsal before it opens, and we're going to have an event. It's just a small fundraiser. The topic itself deals with the main character dealing with dementia. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very meaningful and creative, and I'm not going to give a lot away from the play, but you come away with a real empathy and understanding, and perhaps feeling a little bit like you're dealing with this. We're excited that the director, Eric Stein, is going to do a little bit of a talk back with us afterwards. So again, these things are...
And that's going to be on the...
August 27th. Yeah, Thursday, August 27th. I'll repeat our website with our events page over and over again towards the end.
And that is for a donation, right?
That's right.
People can get tickets to that for a donation. Suggested is $50, but you'll take whatever.
That is absolutely right. Yep. If you go to our hospicelow.org events page, you can get the link to the tickets. And you're right. We have a suggested donation of $50, which is all for which is coming to us. Which is obviously important, but the conversation in and what I really wanted to see is people coming together, right? I keep talking about the community and how important it is,
right?
And how isolation is terrible with a combination of grief. So if you can come out and sit in an audience, and I saw this, you know, I saw this earlier with one of the films that I did. You can sit in an audience and connect and have an emotional response and cry because it's dark. And all of a sudden, the 30 of you or the 100 of you or the 300 of you have just had a human experience sitting together. And I think that's a little bit healing.
I think it's also a way of generating conversation. I know as doing death education, using prompts through films is a great way to demonstrate what people are feeling on the inside and a way of generating a discussion about that. You also have appeared in a film recently with Mike Farrell.
Yeah.
Called Strawberry.
Yes, that's the Strawberry.
Strawberry is a film about a person who has Alzheimer's.
It's a medical aid in dying film.
Medical
so the tragic farce. I've got a lot of stuff going. The tragic farce is the dementia
topic. This is a medical aid in dying film.
It is. I was just unbelievably fortunate to be a part of this film. It's a beautiful film. We're playing it around the country at select theaters, and we'll eventually get to a theatrical run and. Things of that nature.
Which is a big topic of discussion with choices.
Yes, for sure. It's a very moving film. Mike Farrell, for those of you who are like, who is this?
MASH.
He was on MASH. This is BJ Honeycutt from MASH. Yeah. So everybody of a certain age fell in love with all of the characters from MASH. Mm-hmm. I was just so fortunate to be a part of that. It was filmed right here in Cambria. Which was, you know, it's beautiful here. So it tells a story of someone who's diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer mm-hmm. in his 80s and his decision on what to do about that. Mm-hmm. And I'm in this film, I'm one of his grown sons. And this topic can cause a lot of discussion. And so the family is a little bit dysfunctional and has some issues. But we work through as a family all of the implications, and we tell a story again that I think it opens up conversations. It doesn't really leave a dry eye in the theater, mm-hmm. but really kind of moving. And those are the things that mean a lot to me, right?
Right.
As an actor, you have this opportunity to be a part or play a story to really a full effect, that you have an emotional impact on your audience, that you give of yourself so that others can then participate, feel those emotions, and then I hope have those conversations, you know?
How much of that, because the things that you describe, for instance, dementia.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of the patients that receive home care support from Hospice Slow have some form of dementia, because dementia is an illness, is a disease that is a very long transitional disease. And it's often, most often, a disease where people are staying at home.
Yeah.
They're being cared for by their family, who have years of taking care of their family members, and they need help. They need respite. They need support. And the volunteers that you talk about have been trained in how to give support, give them some respite care, offer them some light at the end of the tunnel, even if it's only once a week. But and that's a lot of who the caregivers, you've got groups for caregivers
that's
to
right.
try and give them support. So as you're seeing that, or advanced care directives mm-hmm. that you do at Hospice Slow, then helping people talk about what they want or what they don't want at the end of their life.
Yeah.
You know, those are some big decisions that require big family discussions, right? That may not be friendly discussions.
Yeah, and they're hard to talk about.
Yeah.
Right? They're hard to talk about, especially if this is, you know, something that you have some, and a lot of people have a lot of fear or mm-hmm. their own grief. They're carrying the mm-hmm. grief from the losses they had suffered through their life and maybe didn't process it very well. So it is very difficult. And again, it has this isolation thing. Dementia, or really any mental illness, comes with some shame sometimes. Dementia is a good one to talk about because there's not a clear, you know, today I'm fine and tomorrow I'm not, right? It's not black and white. You can't see it. It happens slowly. And it's confusing. It's confusing to the person who's dealing with it. It's often confusing to the friends and family. And knowing how to navigate that, there's not a, you know, we do have a book on how it, I mean, there are books on it, but it is not common knowledge. And so those topics are difficult, right? Advanced care, that's another one, right? So that has to, you have to admit that, and even though we all know our time on this planet is limited, we have to start thinking about what that means. Again, the same with the topic around medical aid and dying, right? How do you die? You know, is the way you personally feel about it, you know, does everyone understand that, right? And those are all tough conversations, and they're even tougher for the family. I mean, it's fantastic when the family gets on board, and sometimes that happens for sure, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's the ideal case, right? There's a lot of communication, and there's a lot of love, and there's, you know, you try to pull the extra pain. There will be pain, right? None of us, you know, there's no getting out of this without some of that. And I think that's where we can make a difference. We can help with that. And, you know, to the point that it doesn't show up one day and end exactly 6 months later, right? This starts early. And even after your loved one passes away, you deal with a lot of the grief, a lot of the things that have impacted you because you're still, you know, dealing with all of your feelings. And so that is why we can I feel like make a difference, because we're not stuck to these time limits. We can be there for people early, during, at the moment, afterwards. And what I'll tell you, and I know you know this, that our biggest supporters, our biggest donors, our biggest volunteers are generally people who have come through and been a part of our service,
mm-hmm.
right?
Received services.
So
yeah.
Nothing tells you that you're doing the right thing more mm-hmm. than helping someone and having them turn around and help you. So that cycle, that's really that magic of working in nonprofits. It's the ability to inspire people, to help them when they need that moment, but inspire them to help others. And that's kind of the engine that we run on.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio. If you love tuning in to Hidden Brain every Sunday morning here on KCBX, now's your chance to see host Shanka Vendatam live on stage on September 20th at the PAC. He'll share fresh perspectives on how our mind works. Tickets are at calpolyarts.org. My guest today is Abe Lincoln, Executive Director for Hospice Slo County. We have about 13 minutes left in our show today for calls at 805-781-3875. And Abe, when we talk about hospice ready, a person is or isn't hospice ready, the definition is to be hospice ready, somebody would have been diagnosed by a physician to be what the physician would think the person might be within 6 months or less,
right,
of the end of their life. That, you know, that is a guesstimate for the person. And it is generally so that people avoid hospice at all costs. They really avoid hospice.
Sure.
And it's like hearing the person's on hospice, all of a sudden everybody goes, oh, I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And you have people that have been on hospice for years.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. My wife is a volunteer, and she has been with a client of hers for almost 5-6 years.
Yeah.
And that's because there's no one way to die.
Right.
There's
right. People may have a terminal illness.
Right.
But terminal these days, with the kind of medications that we have, with the kinds of exploratory or transitions that happen, it can be elongated for prolonged periods of time. People who have congestive heart disease,
mm-hmm.
people who have breathing disorders, Parkinson's disease is a very long progressive disease, and the person may get more and more debilitated, but they're still alive.
Right. And you know, my issue with the cutoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you stop your medication, there's a lot of rules around that.
Yeah, do they have to stop their medication to come to you hospice Slo?
No.
Do they have to stop treatment?
No.
To come to hospice Slo?
No.
Do they have to stop experimental treatment?
No.
We're
here not only for the client. We're here for the family. We're here long before. Don't wait till everything has fallen apart. I know that our name, I know the word hospice comes with a lot of baggage. And there's part of us that have worked in this organization. You know, we talk about, well, we're one of 14 non-medical volunteer hospices. We do grief counseling. We give care management. Our in-home volunteers provide respite, right? A break for that family. We do education. We do all those things. So there's just not a word for all the things that we do.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do them anyway. Like I said, you know, I have this image of this big giant hug around hospice, and that's what we are. We're the arms that go a long way around that moment, that defined moment of the 6 months of the, you know, the stopping treatment and things like that. And I believe with all my heart that people live longer and better. Or if they're not, you know, when your medical hospice, if you make some of these decisions and you feel isolated and lost, you deteriorate very quickly, right? Mm-hmm. Without that community, without that connection, without that help. And so in a way, I've believed this for a long time. We do deal with life and death, but we really make a difference on how you live, because we help you on how you die, and that's a really powerful thing. And again, I realize not everybody gets that, and that's hard to hear. But I think there's a lot of truth there.
I think there's a lot of confusion about palliative care and hospice care, and palliative care is delivered all through the course of somebody's disease.
Right.
Hospice care is at the very end. So palliative care is delivered at the time that person is diagnosed.
Right.
You're doing symptom management. Now, they may be also getting a drug hoping for a cure or a drug hoping to stave off the disease from taking their life or slowing it down. But that the palliative care is part of that.
For sure.
And the palliative care also is treating the symptoms that that drug that they're taking to slow it down is not giving them things that are interfering in their life. You know,
right.
The nausea, the kinds of things that are keeping them from living the life that they kind of want. At some point, we will all move to a place where we're at the very end of our life. And hospice care is very appropriate.
For sure.
Because there are resources that you can get from hospice care that you can't get otherwise.
Right, right.
In hospice, like Hospice Slow, you can have volunteers. You can have somebody to give you respite, to give you a break, so you can go out. The caregiver can go out and do some things.
Yeah.
Get away. Get some fresh air. Get a break. Bring somebody else into the house so it's another face and a voice.
Yeah.
So you're not isolated. Live. Do
right.
things you enjoy. You know, it's about living the best days that you can,
right.
not about dying. And I think that's really, you offer Reiki.
Right.
You offer yoga.
That's right.
You offer, do you offer music bowls?
Yep.
Yes.
The singing bowls, of course.
The singing bowls.
Yeah.
All of that is just wonderful stuff that can make people feel more alive and comfortable in their living. And we have a call here from Bill. Bill, hi.
Hi.
You had
glad
a
I called your show.
You have a question or a comment?
Well, both, I guess.
Okay.
30 years ago, hospice helped me deal with me taking care of my aging mother, and they were invaluable. And now I'm 81 years old, and I have Parkinson's, and I can use some assistance myself. But I didn't know where to reach you exactly.
Okay. Do you have something to write it down?
I do.
All right. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. I'll have Abe give it to you.
So online, we're at hospiceslow.org, and as a phone number, it's 805-544-2266. I'll say that again, 805-544-2266, and hospiceslow.org.
Got it.
And you just tell them what you need, and they'll get you started.
Absolutely.
I know I had a wonderful experience last time, even though it was 30 years ago.
I'm so glad to hear that, and I'm so glad that you're calling to get some help for yourself.
Hospice Slow rocks.
Thank you.
Well, you know what? You rock too, Bill. You take
Thank
care
you
of yourself.
Bye-bye.
Bye. How cute. And that's an example of someone who had somebody for a relative.
Right. And I mean, that 30 years ago, right?
Right.
That we are at this place where we're generational now. And and again, I see my role as just a small part of of this long journey that, you know, I'll help it. And it will survive, and this community will keep it, and it's really a kind of an honor to even be a part of it. So
yeah. What what have we not talked about that we need to touch on?
So we talked about our event, which is coming up on August 27th. Again, hospiceslow.org events. It's a preview of the farce, or the father, a tragic farce. We have a couple other things. We are going to do the second and third films from the film that we talked about. They're documentaries on dying. The second one is called Saying Goodbye, Preparing for Death. And the third one, again, these will be at the Palm, Architecture of Death, The Inner World of Dying, end of September and November.
And what are those films about?
They are continues those discussions around how we talk about death, what is a good death, what the body needs, what happens when we're dying. So these are documentaries. It's a part of this three-part series from When You Die. Beautiful films, some comedy, some heavy stuff, some science, some spirituality, some practicality, but conversations that keep going.
Great.
So we're working on getting folks out into this community to talk about this subject. Of course, we have Light Up a Life on December 1st at the Mission, which is our annual event. I've been reading names there for the 6 years I've been there. It's an incredibly moving event. It's the same concept. We fill the Mission with people, and we read the names of loved ones who have passed. We intersperse some music or some poetry. We have a little bit of a sermon there, but really it's the hearing those names again. And you can see, and I know you know this.
I go every year because I love that there is the reverence of, during the holiday season, having a place, and the Mission is a great place to do this, to be able to remember the people that aren't sitting at the table anymore. That, you know, whether it's my granddaughter or my parents, it's a time to be able to set aside that moment to do that for myself and my family.
And it's such a beautiful experience. Mm-hmm. And it's you know, I mentioned this earlier about the film or about theater. You get to experience your own personal healing surrounded by people who understand exactly what you're going through.
Yeah.
And that is one of the things when you go through this, when individually you feel alone, like I'm the only one who's dealt with this. And that's the worst thing to feel, that you don't have a community. And so Light Up a Life is a perfect example of people who come together, have this beautiful ceremony. We go light up the tree afterwards and, you know, we connect again. And then, of course, next year, 2027, is our 50-year, and we will have a big event. We've started planning that. I can't give you any details yet, but 50 is a big deal. 50 is a big deal.
I remember it.
Yeah, so that's what is coming up for 2027.
Thank you so much. I want to thank my guest today, Abe Lincoln, Executive Director for Hospice Slo County. And my next week, host Lada Morty will have guests Danielle Martinez and Dylan Neville to discuss Crestwood Connection. I'm Chris Kington Barker for you here on Central Coast Voices. Thank you for joining me and for being a KCBX listener.